So, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much for this amazing turn up to this special event. On behalf of the Hellenic Bankers Association, I would like to welcome you all to what promises to be a very insightful discussion. We are deeply honored for organizing this event alongside the Hellenic Observatory of the London School of Economics. But most importantly, we are very humbled for hosting the most premier figure of the economic and financial affairs of our country and one of the most influential economists and financiers in our continent, Professor Stounaras. Today's discussion will span across the recent financial and debt crisis that evolved in our country, but most importantly, focus on what lies ahead for the Greek economy. So without further delay, allow me to pass the floor to Professor Monastriotis and the Governor Stounaras.
Thank you, Mr. Katsikas. Dear guests, dear students, dear governor, dear friends and colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, it gives us great pleasure to be hosting this public lecture tonight with a truly distinguished speaker, somebody who has been at the heart of macroeconomic policy in Greece for over four decades, and also very great pleasure to have that event in collaboration with the Hellenic Bankers Association. Our collaboration with the Hellenic Bankers Association has a long history. The HBA has supported many of our activities over the years, and we have hosted jointly many lectures. The last one was, I think, in this room with Paul Thompson back in 2019, and it's great that we're now able to resume our collaboration also post-COVID after quite a long hiatus on this. I think it's also a great time to be hosting this lecture, and this is for two reasons. One, looking inward towards our home at the Hellenic Observatory. This is a period where the Hellenic Observatory is changing, is expanding. Some people in the audience would already know. We're establishing ourselves as a research center here at the LSE, and we're expanding our membership and our in-house research on Greece and Cyprus across a range of themes, from politics, of course, economics, society, values, structural reforms, but also the new challenges linked to the green and digital transition. Stay tuned for more information about the transition of the observatory into the new LSE Research Center on Greece and Cyprus, which have been made possible with the very generous support of many of the friends of the Hellenic Observatory, but also of the banking system and the systemic banks and the banks of Greece in Greece. But at the same time, it's a great time to be having this lecture, because after many years of malaise and crisis and economic and other upheaval, Greece is now officially, if I may dare say, it has entered a period of economic upturn, maybe even, God forbid, economic stability. It is not only the endorsement of the Economist as the best country just recently, but also the fact that the country has regained its investment status by the credit rating agencies, and also I think the endorsement of the country gets, at least in its economic policy, by the European institutions for its growth, the path of economic recovery. Of course, there's many challenges ahead, and I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about both the successes and the challenges ahead in the lecture that follows. Now, our speaker, of course, tonight is without doubt one of the most qualified people to talk about this path to recovery and the challenges ahead. Professor Giannis Stounaras is, of course, the governor of the Bank of Greece. He has been in this position since 2014, for 10 years, and previously he was finance minister in the years of the crisis in the tripartite government of Mr. Samaras. Throughout his career, he served in many roles as chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors between 1994 and 2000, but also as general director of the Foundation of Economic and Industrial Research, the IOVE, also as chairman of the Emporiki Bank, vice chairman of the Hellenic Bank Association in Greece, and many others. And of course, through these roles, he has also had a lot of interaction, a lot of experience with the European institutions, the Eurogroup, and the European Central Bank, obviously, in particular. But Professor Stounaras is also a distinguished academic. He's professor of economics at the University of Athens. He holds a PhD, a DPhil, from the University of Oxford, where he has also worked as a fellow and a lecturer a few years back, I think. but also published widely in economic journals and in economic policy journals. Now, before I pass the floor to our speaker, let me make some housekeeping announcements. The event is being live streamed, we hope, on the Hellenic Observatory YouTube channel, and is also being recorded. It will be made available as a podcast and a video, subject to facing any technical difficulties. For those using the Twitter or the X, the hashtag for the event today is hashtag LSE Greece, one word. And after the governor will finish his presentation, we'll have a short discussion between us at your audience, and then I will open the event to for the questions from the floor. When you are given the opportunity to ask your question, please wait for the microphone that will be circulated to come to you before you speak. Please try to be brief and to the point. We invite questions, not statements, and also please try to identify yourself, name and affiliation. And also may I say that please remind yourselves that what are the rules of the engagement, so to speak, at the LSE. We promote public dialogue, we champion, we think, free speech, but of course, like every other public institution, I may should also emphasize the public character of the institution, we allow no space for harassment, for racism, of course, inappropriate language, or anything of that sort. So I would expect that you very respectfully ask your questions and keep them to that. So with these procedural things, let me stop here, and let me please join me in welcoming our speaker, Professor Yannis Tournaris.
Dear colleagues, dear friends, the last time I spoke here, if I remember well, was in 2015. I came here to provide arguments why Greece should stay in the euro and will stay in the euro, and to reply to arguments that we should leave the euro. So you can imagine how happy I am today that after 9 years, I'm now here to talk about a success story. Of course, success stories also face challenges, so I prefer also to talk about the challenges, not only the past and the present, but also the future. So, let me start. Well, beyond any doubt, Greece can be considered as an international success story. The recent recovery of investment grade status confirms this. Bond spreads and other metrics were actually consistent with investment grade status, even when Greece had not formally achieved investment grade. Economic growth is expected to be considerably higher than the average Eurozone growth rate in the medium term. Major fiscal problems, debt sustainability, as well as bank restructuring and recapitalization issues have been successfully resolved during the period of the three adjustment programs. However, if you remember, in the second half of the 2000s, an imprudent fiscal policy and loss of competitiveness created gigantic twin deficits, that is, a deficit of the public sector and the current account deficit of the order of 15% of GDP, and financial problems, which brought Greece into the center of the global financial crisis, with markets and analysts predicting Grexit both in 2012 and 2015. So, how did Greece turn into a success story? As I said, in both occasions, both in 2012 and 2015, many academic economists, analysts, investors, I would say 80% of them, they advise us to leave the euro. I think they made a mistake. Leaving the euro has no precedence. No country has left its currency in economic history. Never. So leaving the euro is not just a devaluation. So because they thought that if we could leave the euro, we could devalue, we could monetize our debt. But leaving the euro was much more than a devaluation. It would create chaos with contracts, with banks, with everything. So the first lesson is that leaving a currency is much more than a devaluation. But let us see, many people are asking me today, how did Greece turn itself into a success story? Well, first, Greece undertook very painful domestic fiscal and structural adjustment during the three adjustment programs. When I say painful, the primary deficit of the budget was about 10% of GDP in 2009. It ended up more than 4% of GDP in 2017. But the adjustment was not only 15% of GDP, because if you take into account the cycle, the economic cycle, the adjustment was perhaps over 30% of GDP. So it was the most painful fiscal adjustment ever in an OECD country. So Greece solved its fiscal problem, its fiscal problems. It did many structural reforms at that time. It stabilized the social security system. It stabilized the tax system, and many others. The second factor of success, that there was a very strong will of the country to stay in the Eurozone. Even in the darkest moments that I remember, the support of the euro never fell below 60%. So that gave us courage to continue. Third, and as a say a compensation of the efforts, we had a very generous debt refinancing at very favorable terms. In my view, it was the biggest assistance ever given in economic history to a country. We got more than 289.9 billion euros, so more than 150% of GDP in new loans with very low interest rates. 1.1% was the effective interest rate, with a 20-year maturity, and debt held by official sectors. The fourth reason was the ECB waiver. So the ECB, in a way, allowed Greek bonds to be accepted for refinancing, despite the fact that Greece did not have investment grade. That was called a waiver. Of course, the waiver is not needed anymore because Greece has obtained investment grade. Now, in more recent years, we have the generous participation of the country into the RRF, the Recovery and Resilience Fund, and the NGEU, which was created during the pandemic. Greece actually is about to receive 36 billion euros. It has already received 15. So this is a form of direct foreign investment. And of course, the most important of the factors is that in the last several years, orthodox fiscal, financial, and structural policies are being pursued. Let's see what are the baseline projections for Greece and compared with the Eurozone. The Eurozone is in parentheses. So you can see, first of all, that the growth rate of Greece is much higher for a number of years compared to the Eurozone. So we have real convergence. GDP per head has fallen a lot because of the crisis. So it converges now back. And the important thing is that this is being done without major macroeconomic imbalances. The inflation rate is also converging to the target. But the pleasant surprise is the budget. For instance, in 2023, the government had planned a primary surplus of 1.1%. According to the Bank of Greece data, it seems that in 2023, the primary surplus was actually 1.4% of GDP. So you can compare it with the rest of Europe, of the Eurozone. And we expect it to be more than 2% in 2024 and beyond. This is very important because for destabilization and debt sustainability, we want a primary surplus of 2% of GDP cyclically adjusted. So it seems that Greece is very disciplined as far as this metric is concerned. As you can see also, the general government balance to GDP ratio is below the Maastricht Treaty criteria, is below 3% of GDP, and also goes to zero in the years to come. So Greece is a very special case. It started with very, very high deficits and now has a deficit close to zero, actually. The current account is perhaps the only black spot in this table. The current account is of the order of 6.5% of GDP, and then is expected to fall below 6% in the years to come. Is this a problem? Yes and no. It is not as serious as it was before, because this current account deficit is not caused by a budget deficit, as was the case in 2009-2010. It comes from the difference between investment and savings in the private sector. So it's not as serious as it used to be, but it is a problem, and we will discuss it later. Finally, what is important, you see a very rapid fall of the debt to GDP ratio. This is because of two reasons. First, because we have a rather large primary surplus, 2.1%, 2.3% in 2025. It's expected to be about 2.3% in 2026. So the primary surplus is the right one, but the most important factor is the snowball effect. The snowball effect is the difference between the effective interest rate on public debt and the nominal growth rates, the famous R minus G for you practicing public economics. So the snowball effect is a very important parameter. It was the cause of the collapse of Greece before, and it is now the cause of the reduction of the debt to GDP ratio. Actually, in my view, it is a very important parameter to watch worldwide, not only for the public sector, but also for the private sector. Let's go now to the financial sector, which was one of the victims of the crisis. Because, as you know, the Greek crisis was not a banking crisis. It was a public sector crisis. Of course, banks have been contaminated by the failure of the state for two reasons. First of all, because of the failure of Greek bonds, of state bonds, and second, because of the creation of non-performing loans. So we had to recapitalize banks. So part of the loans we received from our partners, from part of the 289 billion, have been channeled for the recapitalization of the Greek banking system through the HFSF. The funding gap also has been covered by HFSF in cases that we merge banks. And then recently, the government gave state guarantees to Greek banks, and that helped to bring down the NPL ratio, which used to be almost 50% in 2016, that is non-performing loans as a percent of total loans, and now it's less than 6.7%. Of course, it's still high if you take into account that in the European Union, the NPL ratio is only 1.8%. Now, Greek banks enjoy increased profitability. The capital metrics are above the minimum supervisory demand. They have adequate liquidity. They have strong supervision. They enjoy frequent stress tests. There is no national bias. I mean, the SSM has eliminated the national bias in the supervision of banks. They have manageable interest rate risks. They have very limited exposure to commercial real estate and other market risks. And of course, they have the RRF support, the Resilience and Recovery Fund. They have the Hellenic Development Bank support, and of course, they have one of the largest spread in Europe between deposit and lending rates. This is, of course, this is good for banks, but it's bad for the economy and bad for society. We can discuss it later. This is an indication that we need more competition in the Greek banking system. The disinvestment of the state, of the HFSF, from the shares they have in Greek banks is well on its way with very good results. We had a deal between, we had a cross-border transaction between UniCredit and Alpha Bank, and this is a further indication of return to normality. NBG privatization also has been an unexpected success, and very recently, the very significant interest from investors facilitated the successful divestment of the total amount of HFSF shares, which was 27%, in Piraeus Bank. And banks, of course, now Greek banks have full access to capital markets. Finally, last but not least, less significant institutional restructuring and capital increases is well underway, with the merger between Attica Bank and Pancreta Bank being the cornerstone expected in the third quarter of 2024. Why is this important? It is important because we want to put more competition into the banking system. I mean, we have only four systemic banks that they control 95% of the balance sheet of the banking system. We think that more competition will be good for the systemic banks and for the economy as a whole. So the answer is not to ask the competition committee to impose fines, but the answer is more competition. This is why we want to enhance the capabilities of the less significant institutions, perhaps to merge and then challenge the systemic banks. However, as you know, there is strong monetary policy tightening financial conditions, lower demand for credit. Banks now are struggling to have positive net credit expansion. New non-performing loans might emerge. The quality of capital is not the best because 53% is deferred tax claims. It's a legacy of the past. And of course, there is a lack of a homogeneous crisis management framework in Europe and lack of a European deposit insurance scheme. It is very important to adopt the European Commission proposals on crisis management and deposit insurance, actually. The other sector that we supervise is private insurance. Also, we have very good progress. The private insurance sector, which is very important, has very strong capital position now. The solvency requirement, the solvency capital requirement is 2.1 billion versus own capital of 3.7 billion euros. So the SCR ratio is 1.8, one of the highest in Europe. That was the case in the last quarter of 2023. There is large upside, and this is very important. The gross written premiums in Greece approximate only 2.3% of GDP versus 8% in Europe. And the private sector, of course, has many challenges. First of all, to cover a very large insurance protection gap. That is, the private sector does not cover itself from catastrophes, that is earthquakes, floods, wildfires. We all expected that this would be done by the state. This is one of the reasons why we have a high current account deficit, because if the state, if people expect the state to intervene, to cover all risks, then people do not save enough. And actually, this is the reason, the main reason why the current account deficit in Greece is large, because the savings ratio is very small. The same applies not only to catastrophes, but also to health and pensions. The government has already initiated measures for a national catastrophe insurance gap. It has given tax incentives and has made obligatory the insurance of large companies. Many other challenges include climatic change. As you know, the European South is expected to suffer more than the European North or the European Center, and of course, digitalization and cyber threats. What are the investment opportunities in Greece? They are vast. Already, the foreign direct investment is about 2 to 3% of GDP. It was 3.1% of GDP in 2021, 3.6% in 2022. It has fallen a little bit in 2023. It used to be lower before. On top of this, Greece enjoys large inflow of European Union structural funds and the RRF of the order of 65 billion euros in the next 5 years, from 2024 to 2028. The investment to GDP ratio is 13.4% now. It was at the end of 2023. It used to be 16.6% in 2010. Actually, corporate investment has fully recovered to pre-2010 levels. Nevertheless, the total investment to GDP ratio is still lagging behind relative to the EU average, which is 22%, mainly due to the decline in housing investment over the past decade. But investment in housing is catching up very fast. RRF funding is expected to increase investment to GDP ratio to the EU average. We have done some simulations in the Bank of Greece, which shows that full implementation of the RRF and the related reforms to the RRF is expected to increase GDP by 10% over the next 10 years. So only from this cost, only from the RRF funds, the GDP is expected to be 10% higher 10 years from now. Given the large current account deficit we already have, a natural question is, will this create an unsustainable current account deficit? Not necessarily, if strong reforms expand the production capacity in the tradable goods and services sectors, if competitiveness continues to improve, and if fiscal buffers are adequate enough. In any case, foreign direct investment needs to expand even more, especially in periods of high current account deficits. But let's consider what are the challenges here, what are the challenges ahead. Well, while relative unit labor cost and relative prices have fallen because of the measures we have taken during the crisis and more recently, indicating improving competitiveness, according to metrics that they measure structural competitiveness, Greece is still being ranked relatively low because of structural rigidities. In a nutshell, these are delays in the delivery of justice, red tape, rather poor infrastructure, delays in the national cadastre and land use plans, low female and youth participation in the labor market, along with mismatches in labor skills, increased tightness in the labor market, adverse demography, tax evasion, problems in the triangle of knowledge, that is, the triangle which is consists of education, innovation, and research, and oligopolies. Greece is a small economy, so we observe higher spreads in food, in fuels, in banks, and in private hospital care. So these structural rigidities impose a constraint in productive capacity, in potential growth, and total factor productivity growth. Are there exogenous factors with negative implications? I'm afraid yes. Uncertainty has increased worldwide in recent years. We have geopolitical risks. These geopolitical risks, they tend to create stagflationary forces. We had financial stability episodes in the United States, in Switzerland, and we have in certain countries public debt problems. As I said before, the snowball effect, that is the difference between interest rates and growth rates, will likely play a dominant role worldwide in the next period. So my advice is that you follow this metric closely, not only for the public sector, but also for the private sector. I have spotted an exogenous factor with positive implications recently, which is the new fiscal framework in Europe. The old one created a lot of procyclicalities. The Greek crisis is an example of a procyclicality. When we had a problem, we had a negative growth, some of our partners, I don't want to mention names now, they insisted of taking more austerity measures. So, yes, what we gained from the primary surplus fiscally, we lost it from the snowball effect. So the result was that at the end of the crisis, Greece had a higher debt to GDP ratio compared to the first years of the crisis. Of course, the situation was different because this debt had been restructured and could be serviced now. But the fact is that it was the snowball effect, the difference between the interest rate and the growth rate, that created this damage. So, the government has been embarked, and Chris Pissarides is here, I think, on a program to eliminate the above mentioned rigidities with considerable progress to improve structural competitiveness and enhance competition. So it's not important. I mean, some people are pointing out to the strong correlation between improving relative unit labor costs or relative prices and the current account. Greece is an example which this does not apply. So it's also structural competitiveness that plays a role. For instance, the fact that we have a large insurance gap is one of the explanations of the current account deficits. People in Greece, households, do not save enough because they expected that the state will cover the deficits. The second recommendation is that the primary general government surplus should be 2% cyclically adjusted for a long period. This is unfortunately one of the legacies of the crisis. We have to have this cyclically adjusted primary surplus. The third recommendation is to create additional fiscal buffers for unforeseen events, especially climatic crisis. And we had, unfortunately, some first examples in Greece in recent years. The fourth is to accelerate energy conservation and the green transition. And green transition is not only photovoltaic and windmills, it's also batteries, it's also networks. So this is where we should channel our private and public investment. Fifth, although Greece has produced miracles as far as the export ratio is concerned, we exported only 20% of GDP of products and services before the crisis. We export more than 40% now. Imports, though, increased even more. So import substitution is equally important to export promotion. I mean, it's not reasonable for Greece with these weather conditions to import tomatoes and lemons from Poland, for instance. I mean, that shows that something should be mended here. And of course, the sixth recommendation is to maximize the productive use of EU funds and expand foreign direct investment, preferably in productive uses. But if you have a current account deficit of 6%, every FDI is welcome of any form. So we need a vision, a goal, and I think, in my view, is to achieve real convergence but without macroeconomic imbalances, because we have been achieving convergence before, but with very high twin deficits. I mean, that was a bubble which was burst. So the goal is to achieve real convergence, but without major microeconomic imbalances. And the major challenge, which is more short term, is to exploit the investment grade rating that has been achieved recently to move quickly to higher credit rating. Well, thank you.
Governor, thank you, and thank you for staying exactly with time.
I
didn't need to moderate at all on that. As I pre-announced, I would like to start with a couple of questions of my own. And you pretty much covered everything that I was planning to ask, but then you also said that we will talk more about it. So here is the time to talk more about it. I think I would like to start by asking something that you definitely touched upon by saying that we have high spreads in the banking sector, low competition overall, despite the very healthy situation of the banking system and the very recent, very, very good performance of the banks. But would you say, looking back also at the periods of the adjustment programs, that the banking sector consolidation went too far by insisting on the kind of four systemic banks and pretty much, I don't want to say depleting everything else, but like creating a huge gap between the four systemic banks and everything else in the banking system?
Unfortunately, that was a necessity of the crisis because deposit collapsed, a lot of deposits flew out of the country, GDP collapsed, so the economy became much smaller. And so we couldn't have 20 systemic banks as we used to have. That's so this consolidation, unfortunately, was a necessity. Yeah. But now that the economy is growing, four banks, I think, is a very small number. So we need to enhance the capabilities of the less systemic banks. We have now quite a number of smaller ones, so they need to become more resilient, merge among themselves, and challenge the systemic banks. I mean, the large spread between deposit rates and lending rates is an indication of an oligopolistic structure of the Greek banking system. It's one of the most, is one of the highest spreads in Europe, actually. And I said, yes, it is good for the capital of banks, but it's bad for the economy and for society. But I mean, this problem will not be tackled via administrative measures or by taxing the profits of banks, because banks need profits. If they have DTC, the deferred tax capital, of the order of 53% of their capital, they need profits. But we need more competition.
Yeah. Very good. I was referring also to whether the design was wrong, but I fully take the point.
No,
it was
a necessity.
Yeah. And that's the realist view that we've become familiar with. Another dimension, towards the end of the presentation, you had the slide with all the challenges, and there was a bullet point with many, many challenges or potential challenges. But unless I missed it, I didn't see anything on small, medium enterprises or what is the reality in Greece, the really micro firms. And micro firms, I think, have created a bit of a noise or the issue recently, both the sense of what the taxation model and policy of the Greek government is in order to sort of shift the economy away from the small businesses and to more kind of consolidated bigger size firms. But also, I think in the Pissarides report, there was quite clear a steer towards dealing with, moving away from the very small ownership, because also you mentioned the demand for credit is not very high. Well, if you're a small one-person business, what is the chance that you're going to go to a bank for a loan, and you will also get So would you say that the Bank of Greece takes a view on that, and then on what tax or other policy can do in order to move the economy to bigger ownership?
Well, in some countries in the European South, the smaller and medium-sized enterprises is the majority. So this cannot change easily. And some people are saying that's part of the dynamism of the European South, or one of the reasons why, for instance, Greece survived during the crisis, so nobody would say that we should eliminate SMEs. But of course, having many SMEs does not imply that you should turn a blind eye to taxation issues of SMEs. So the government took very necessary measures to increase the taxation of professions and SMEs. It's one thing to say that we need SMEs, and another thing to say that because we need SMEs, we need to turn a blind eye and allow tax evasion among SMEs. So these are two different issues, I think. So the Bank of Greece takes a realistic view. We need both large and small companies. It's part in the DNA of the Greek economy to have SMEs. But definitely tax evasion and turning a blind eye to tax issues is not a reason to support SMEs.
Point taken. But also low productivity may be a reason for that. I mean, you know, you have less investment in a small... I think many years ago, the OECD was championing the SME model of Denmark. The difference was that, obviously not the majority, but a good minority of Danish SMEs ceased to be SMEs after a period of, 10, 15, 20 years, so they became large firms. Whereas, anecdotally, I don't think there's a strong experience of that in Greece. Of course, there are cases. But it's more about how do you make SMEs dynamic enough so that they're not, or at least the micro firms dynamic enough so they become medium.
Well, it's my strong belief that if you want firms to become more competitive and more productive, you need to have a better infrastructure compared to one you have now, to have less red tape in the public sector, to have less bureaucracy, to be more transparent in taxation. So you need horizontal measures to help companies, not vertical ones. I don't think that, and it is not allowed in the European Union to take specific measures in favor of certain companies and against others. So let's take all the necessary infrastructure structural measures that I have mentioned here. Delays in justice, for example. This is a very important issue for direct investment. There's many anecdotal evidence that after the invasion of Russia into Ukraine, after the sanctions, many American companies that they wanted to come to Greece, actually they didn't, or many came, but some of them didn't because of the fear that especially those who are labor intensive, that they if they have a problem either with the unions or with the state, then justice, delays in justice might create problems. So justice is a very important reason for foreign direct investment. And delays in justice is a problem that should be eliminated.
So last question for my side. I was wondering whether to ask this question or another, but because you mentioned horizontal measures now, and in the presentation you said not only export promotion, but we actually need import substitution. Exactly. Of course, like industrial policy, the term import substitution used to be an illegal word. You know, you couldn't mention it sometime between the 80s and the early 2000s. We had a bit of discussion about industrial policy also with Chris Pissarides in a previous HO event. You know, when you talk about, you know, the importance of import substitution to correct the import side of the current account, are you implicitly or to any degree advocating some sort of more active industrial policy
no.
in the Greek state?
But what I argue is that, for instance, in the agricultural sector, we can do miracles because the biodiversity of Greek nature is huge. We have not exploited the capabilities of the agricultural sector, for instance, just one example, and many others. We passed periods of deindustrialization in Greece. I have the example of the island of Syros. Now the shipyards work again, so there's a completely different picture of Syros today, of the island of Syros today, compared to 7 or 10 years ago. It's a very lively island now because of the revival of the shipyards. This is one example. So foreign direct investment is a solution.
very good. Thanks. I think it's time to open to the audience. Please raise your hand to indicate.
But let me mention another serious problem we have in Greece today, after the crisis and the booming economy, is the labor market. Although in theory we have high unemployment of the order of 10%, the problem of mismatch between skills is so important that actually, despite the 10% unemployment, actually 200,000 or 250,000 hands are missing from the labor market in tourist activities, in construction, okay, and in other sectors. The migration could be a solution. High participation of women is a solution, but how can this be achieved? We need measures which combine professional life with family life. These are the structural policies we need in Greece now. I mean, if we look at the big picture, what happened in the previous years, we have solved the first order problems, that is the problem of debt restructuring, the fiscal problem, the banking problem. But we now face a number of smaller second order problems, but putting them together, okay, they create competitiveness issues, like a high current account deficit, for instance. So now it is time to deal with this smaller order problem, which I call structural rigidities. This is the...
Okay, thank you. We'll continue this, but let me bring in the audience. We'll start with a question over there. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, professors. My name is Jan Lekbelos. Thank you, Professor Stournaris, for your presentation. I have one question on the banking sector. But before I get to that, just a quick comment. I don't want to relitigate the past of the euro, but given your role as central bank governor, do you not see any update on the view of whether euro still hurts Greek competitiveness as it did before going forward? This is not a question that should never be reopened. I think in your role, it should always be an open question. And then my main question on the Greek banks, of course, your comments on the rate spread is very important for the profitability of the banks. As far as the economy is concerned, I'm more concerned about the deposits to loan ratio, or the loan to deposit ratio being lower than most other European countries. And I don't quite understand why that is. Are the banks are expecting your permission or somebody else to prod them to loan more? Because obviously on that side, the banks are not performing their role for the economy and they're making a lot of profits. It's good for the short term, for their capital adequacy. And a bonus question, I guess. What about Bitcoin or gold? Do you have a policy
Bitcoin, no.
Or any reason to be looking to build up reserves as other central banks around the world do on gold? We don't know about Bitcoin, but in a world of fiat currency.
Stay away from it. Stay. Okay, but
sure, if that's what your charter says. Yeah. I'm asking for any policy changes. Thank you.
Okay, so no, the euro does hurt competitiveness. Actually, in the last several years before Greece introduced the euro, we had a combination of both high inflation and low growth. So the permission to devalue did not help. Greece started improving its economy, okay, when it started converging to the Maastricht Treaty criteria. And then during the period that we had the euro, we grew faster than the rest. We almost found ourselves bankrupt, not because of the euro, but because of imprudent fiscal policy, okay, and imprudent policies in the public sector. I mean, we recruited thousands of civil servants. I mean, so it was the public sector deficit which created an appreciation of the real exchange rate, and the appreciation of the real exchange rate caused a problem with the current account. So that was the causality. The causality was from the public sector to the current account. It has nothing to do with the euro. It had to do with imprudent fiscal policy. Now, on your second question on the Greek banking system, the reduction of the deposit to loan ratio was legacy of the crisis. Because of the crisis, there was no demand for loans, no demand for credit. Also, the creation of NPLs, of non-performing loans, not because that was a problem or a bad management of banks. It was rather a legacy of the crisis, because the crisis created high unemployment. It created negative growth that gave rise to non-performing loans. So banks had to take measures to reduce NPLs. So the reduction of this ratio was also a legacy of the crisis, not because it was chosen to be like that. And your last question about Bitcoin. The Bitcoin created a good technology, the ledger technology, but the Bitcoin itself is a speculative commodity, I can call it, and I would advise people to stay away from it. Don't be misled by the volatility, by the ups now, but its price is very high. When those with deep pockets will decide to leave Bitcoin, then they will leave the burden to the poorest people. So my advice is to stay away from it.
Good, very good advice. can we take two questions, one from the very back and one, yeah. And then you take two.
Thank you, Professor Sonaras, for being here today.
Can you speak louder, if possible?
Yes, of course. Two quick questions from my side. First one, about the past. In 2018, the then government decided to go for a clear-cut exit from the bailout program, and you came out publicly supporting a precautionary credit line. I would be curious to know why you did that. Second question about the future. Do you honestly believe that we can tackle, as a country, as Greece, external systemic shocks? And thinking of 2020, it was quite exceptional. We had the monetary backstop from the ECB with a waiver that you mentioned and everything. That was unheard of in 2010 or 2012. I wish it was in place there, because I could have been in Athens right now instead of being in London. And we had the second backstop, you also mentioned it, from the RRF, an investment backstop. Do you think we can count on those two backstops for any future emergency? Thank you.
Thanks. So, therefore, if we can tackle external shocks without the backstop, without the future external shocks, without RRF, or will we always need this kind of injection support? Can we take another question? Do you mind, or do you want to answer?
No, I prefer to answer one by one. I think. I took a position for a precautionary line because it would have been cheaper. For instance, the fact that we did not choose a precautionary line, we had to build a buffer, and that buffer costs about 600 million euros in interest payments every year. So choosing a precautionary line, in my view, would have been cheaper and would have brought down interest rates quicker and the investment grade been obtained earlier. That's my view, of course. But this is now virtual history, and it's not. Now, the RRF and the NGU, they help the Greek economy. So we should exploit this money in the next 3 years. But it doesn't mean that without the RRF, the Greek economy will not grow. The upside is huge still. So it's mostly a question of following the right policies, the right fiscal policy, the right financial policy, and the right structural policy. So in my view, it's the combination of having a 2% cyclically adjusted primary surplus and doing the necessary reforms that will put the economy into a sustainable growth path without any problem. So that's the, of course, the European Union has structural policies and has structural funds. This will continue, but this does not mean that the Greek economy depends entirely on the backstops of the European Union. It has mostly to do with us following the right policies, okay, rather than receiving external assistance.
Hello, can you hear me? Okay, Theo Vantopoulos, LSE Hellenic Observatory. I have a question regarding systemic banks. First of all, thank you very much. It was very stimulating, your presentation. So there is, within the Greek business sector, there's the discussion about the charges in terms of commission rates in the interbanking transactions happening, and also the POS charges. And that creates potentially distortion in the market, and it might lead to unofficial transactions, encouraging unofficial transactions because of the burden. So what is your stance on this, whether this should be done more? And if this results to a profitability of the systemic banks, if there is a harsh, this is tackled and it's reduced, could it reduce significantly the profitability of the systemic banks, and would that be a problem? Thank you.
As I said before, it's true that the Greek banks enjoy a high spread between deposit rates and loan rates, and this is caused by the oligopolistic structure of the banking system, but also because risks are still higher, despite the fall in the NPL ratio, it is still higher than in the rest of Europe. So there's still high risk in the Greek banking system compared to the European banking system. But it is true that the larger proportion of this spread is due to the oligopolistic structure. So my answer to this and to fees, et cetera, is higher competition. I would not advise any other kind of action, like taxation of profits or whatever. The answer to this problem is more competition, and we have the instrument. It's the smaller banks that needs to be supervised in a better way, and create also higher capital in order to be able to challenge the systemic banks. This is the policy we follow in the last several years. And now the non-systemic part of the banking system now has been strengthened. Certain smaller banks have closed. Certain others have merged among themselves. We now plan to merge Pankretan Bank with Attica Bank, so that we create a fifth pole to be able to compete and challenge the systemic banks. So this is the answer to the problem of higher spreads or higher fees.
We'll take a question here, and then we'll open up to more questions. But in the meantime, can I ask, does this mean also kind of focusing on product differentiation? So you want the smaller banks to become more boutique and specialize in different products, or is it just, you know, creating a fifth pole and possibly a sixth?
But they already do that. For instance, banks in the periphery, the cooperative banks, they specialize on SMEs more than the systemic ones. So the raison d'etre of the cooperative banks is the local specialization, and they do it. And there, some of them are very good. I don't want to name now cooperative banks, but one or two of them are fantastic. They had no NPLs during the crisis. So they are very, very strong local banks. And we want this model to expand.
Okay, thank you. Yes?
Hello, can you hear me? Yeah. My name is Argyris Hatzilias. I'm based in London, a partner at Venero Capital. Mr. Stournaras, thank you very much for your presentation. Speaking about the future of the Greek economy, one of the key concepts, but also incentives in any economy, is actually innovation. And what we've seen, especially the last 10 years in the Greek ecosystem, is some venture capitals, but also some very successful high growth tech companies, which started in Greece, they went global, and they've been able to raise equity and debt, but from international institutions. My question is the following. What kind of steps do you think that the Greek banking sector should actually take to support the high growth tech and life sciences ecosystem in Greece?
Well, despite the crisis and the brain drain, Greece has a very high comparative advantage in good scientists, okay? So the first material is here. What we need here, we need venture capital, so we need entrepreneurship to exploit the presence of very good brains in Greece, to exploit the comparative advantage in the country. So the banking system have all, the banking sector have all the good people to exploit these opportunities and look at the at the potential of these companies. But it's not only the banking system. It's also foreign capital. It's also venture capital that comes from abroad. But my advice is that there is ample space for a better combination or cooperation between these companies and universities and the research centers, so that we can exploit all the scientific personnel that exists in Greece and produce innovative products or services. But it's not so much a question of the banking system. The ecosystem is much larger. And also international banks like the EBRD, for instance, or the European Investment Bank, they also take an interest in this kind of firms in Greece. So there's very, very good future. I mean, they survived during the crisis. We have a proliferation of new companies now of this kind, and we have the brains in Greece to support these companies. So we need entrepreneurial capital to combine these opportunities. So it's not a question of banks so much as it is a question of entrepreneurial capital.
Yanni, you will allow me to take note of the bits of questions so that we have more questions to ask. So one question from at the top here at the front of the top, and then if we can pass the mic, Yorgo, to the gentleman in the very middle of the... Yes.
Hi. Here. Upstairs. Okay.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Stefano Duni. I'm Italian. I'm not Greek, sorry. I have a question related to what you say before. Like Greece, we can say they represent a story of success, in particular in the last period. And this success was also thanks to the common monetary policy in the Eurozone. And do you feel like to continue in the right direction and also for aiming to a further rating upgrade for Greece, it can be useful to be part of on a common fiscal policy within the Eurozone, a real properly common fiscal policy? So this is my question.
Okay.
Thank you. Before you answer, we'll take some other questions.
I'll remind me.
Hello, so my question is following up the question of Argyris earlier. So looking towards the future shape and composition of the Greek financial ecosystem, how do you see the entrance of private equity, private debt, venture capital as an alternative? So instead of, let's say, having more competition from the smaller banks getting bigger, how about, you know, these alternative players? So that's step one. And step two, seeing it from your viewpoint as a regulator, we know there is this debate at the policy level about the lack of regulation in this alternative finance industry. So would you see as a welcome event if you have a greater footprint of these alternative finance entities? Is it like a risk or an opportunity or both at the same time?
Let's start with monetary policy has been successful despite all the criticism that has been leveled at against the Federal Reserve or the ECB. We have achieved a soft landing. You remember 1 or 2 years ago, people have been much more pessimistic compared to the future, especially after the invasion of Russia into Ukraine. Despite that, inflation is falling. I don't know if you have seen the numbers in the table. Yes, in Europe, we don't have considerable growth, but we don't have a recession. And if you exclude the specific problems of Germany that had to do with the business model, which I think will be overcome next year. We have achieved what we call a soft landing. So inflation is falling without recession and without financial stability problems. This is very, very, very important. Of course, the problems in Europe are different than the problems in the United States. So I have said before that the job of the ECB is more difficult than the job of the Federal Reserve, because we have still fragmentation in Europe. We are only a monetary union. We are not a fiscal union. We are not a capital markets union. We are not even a banking union. So the Eurozone suffers from architectural problems. Despite that, the ECB managed to stabilize the economy to a very large extent. Of course, I'm with you. I mean, if we could have a fiscal union in Europe, it would have been much better. But politically, I don't think that this is possible in the near future. But we should be more moderate. Let's start with banking union. That does need a treaty change. Let's start with capital markets union, even easier. But we cannot agree even to this less ambitious issues. But we need more Europe now, not less Europe. And climatic change, defense needs, implies more investment for Europe, as we did during the pandemic. The NGU, the RRF, was created, this 800 billion euros. It was created during the pandemic, the pandemia. It is a very successful instrument for the cohesion of Europe, with the right kind of conditionality, not the kind of conditionality that we had during the Greek crisis, but a constructive conditionality, a productive conditionality. So this is the kind of policies we need. We need a fiscal capacity at the center of Europe, and the NGU could continue and be part of the beginning of a fiscal union.
And you also mentioned the recent kind of reforms in the, or agreements in the fiscal framework are helping in this direction.
As I said, a positive exogenous factor is the new fiscal pact we have in Europe. The previous one was impossible. I mean, the previous one demanded that we reduce public debt by 1/20th every year. I mean, many countries couldn't do that. It was unrealistic. It was procyclical. And the Greek crisis proved that our policies should not be procyclical, should be countercyclical, because if you follow procyclical policies, then the snowball effect punishes you. This is why now. And the Greek crisis could be called the midwife of history, in the sense that new instruments have been created due to the Greek crisis. The way we look at the new fiscal situation and the new fiscal instruments, the ESM, the whatever it takes of Mario Draghi, all these were part of the Greek crisis. So it was the Greek crisis, the midwife of history, David. I think that's to remember Karl Marx here.
Since we talk about Marx, let's talk about private equity and venture capital.
Yeah. I think the government of Greece is very keen to attract venture capital in Greece now. We have already large companies coming to Greece, like Microsoft, like Webex, like Cisco, and others. We want even more innovative ones in the field of artificial intelligence, for instance. Greece could attract young people, new scientists, and new capital. Greece offers now very large opportunities, and a very liberal government welcoming this. Supervision now. These sectors are not being supervised. They are not, in a way, they are not listed in the stock market, so you cannot supervise these sectors. Of course, good governance is needed. There is the Ministry of Development, the competition committees, but you cannot supervise like we supervise banks, which are public companies. But you're welcome to come to Greece and and invest. And I think now we have, as you see, I mean, the future of Greece is much brighter than its past, than its recent past.
But then it's, if it's impossible to supervise, then do we need better or more regulation?
You cannot regulate, I mean, okay, I mean, you cannot regulate private capital. You cannot regulate, I mean, this is not part of the shadow banking system. That's, they're not listed. So they don't take deposits, they don't give loans, or they give private loans. So how can you supervise these companies?
Okay, let's take, I have many questions, we'll take groups of questions and
yes,
we'll answer
please.
Very briskly. We'll start one here, one there, and then we'll move at the center back. Very briefly.
Hello. Yes, Dimitris Kolias. I'm a macro strategist. Professor Stournare, ευχαριστώ για την ομιλία. I had a few questions. I had a question around. You mentioned that 10% of GDP growth over the next 10 years from the RRF program and all the grants. How much of the central bank's projections? Is all the growth that you project based off those that money, or do you see other sort of contributors to that GDP growth, you know, looking out 4, 5, maybe 10 years ahead in the medium term? If you could answer that, what are the policies or what are the growth drivers in the real economy that you see sort of stimulating Greece over and above the grants and the support we're getting from the EU?
Thanks. And if you can pass the mic to 6 positions to your right. Yep.
Nefeli Duma, Bank of England. Governor, thank you very much. It's been really informative. I've got 2 questions. First, I'd like to know what is the impact of losses the ECB incurs from the reevaluation of the sovereign bonds it holds on the Eurozone central banks? And for how long will these losses have a significant bearing on their profitability? And the other question is more BOG focused. Given the rise in real estate prices over the past 3 years and gold at record highs, how likely is an increase of the BOG's equity through the capitalization of the value increase of these assets, as has happened in the past?
Okay, let's
And if so, could that occur over the next 2 years? Thank you very much.
Okay, so I didn't get also the last
part
of the question, but let's say about the revaluation of the sovereign bonds and the losses incurred to the European
central banks.
Bank.
To the central
yes.
banks. Okay, yeah. okay, okay. That's an issue.
Yeah, and then the real economy sources of growth.
Yeah. Reply the first question. I think our simulations regarding the impact of RRF on GDP growth is based on 2 things. As you know, the RRF is being directed to digitalization. A green transition and certain investment in human capabilities, but also it requires it imposes certain conditionalities. So it's the we estimate the combination of investment in these sectors and the structural reforms that is being implied by the RRF. And we use the DSG model to arrive at this result. So it's a classical DSG model that has been used by the Bank of Greece to evaluate the impact of the RRF into the Greek economy. Now on the losses. First of all, despite the losses. All the central banks in the Eurozone do not have capital problems. So because they have accumulated reserves of the past, okay, and because they had very high profits before, so we expect 1 or 2 more years of losses, no more. So we don't envisage capital requirements to be raised. For central banks, no issue of independence. So it's an exaggeration in my view. First of all, as you know, we don't maximize profits in central banks. If we were to maximize profits, we let inflation go up, and profits would be in the numbers of billions. So it is monetary policy needs that has dictated this non-conventional monetary policy that is leading now a number of banks into heavy losses. But if you take the counterfactual, if we hadn't followed this monetary policy, I'm absolutely sure that we were going to have a Japanification of the European economy, with very low, even negative inflation, and negative growth, and very high unemployment. So I'm afraid that is the necessary cost that central banks and governments, because at the end of the day, all the profits or losses of the central banks go to the common balance sheet between the state and the central bank. So it was part of the necessary cost in order to save the European economy and not to suffer for a number of years with negative growth and negative inflation. As you know, negative inflation is as bad as high inflation.
Okay, we just have time for another small round of questions, so we can take the question comment by here at the front, and then the lady one row back.
It's Christos Magalides, CEO of Piraeus Bank. I just wanted to ask the professor and governor one more a bit personal question. You have been the Minister of Finance in very difficult times during the crisis, and then, of course, in the governor of the Bank of Greece, again, under difficult circumstances. What was the most challenging moment that you remember from those years, and the most difficult one?
Okay, before you answer that, let's take the question just from the back.
Hello, my name is Anna Valero. I work here at the LSE, and I'm a half Greek. My question relates to the comments you made about the labor market. So female participation in particular. So improving participation is important for growth, but there's also the better allocation and utilization of female talent and the productivity impacts that could flow from that. So my question was, what are the key barriers in Greece? Is it cultural? Is it working practices? Is it the availability of childcare? And how can those things be addressed on this drive for growth?
Okay, let's take these two first, because that's... I think, Christo, first of all, congratulations for the privatization with Ilias Xenofakis. Those two are the instrumental for the privatization of Piraeus Bank, and Ilias, of course, for the other banks as well. The most difficult year of all the ones you mentioned was 2012, because many people thought that Greece would not stay in the euro, and of course, to 2015. That was the first semester of 2015, that was the kind of negotiation that the Greek government then had to follow, the strange ideas about a parallel banking system, about a parallel currency. So the Bank of Greece had to be very vigilant in protecting the country from entering into this kind of adventures, I think. But thank God, at the end of the day, all went well. Now, labor market. Difficult issue. Low women participation. I think this has to do with the inability to combine professional life with family life. Now, is it cultural? Is it our DNA? Is it because companies in Greece do not invest in, for instance, nurseries? So these are the factors that the Greek government should look at. It's not easy. It's not only public policy, but also a question of responsibility of the private sector as well. It's very important problem, because the population of Greece is being reduced. So this is not a good omen, I think. The other problem is skills, mismatching of skills. According to the OECD metrics, we have one of the worst skill mismatching in the OECD. It is Turkey has the worst, we're number two. So we need to look at education. What are the professions that are being produced by our universities? Do we want universities to be totally apart from the labor market? I think no. So we should look at the relations between education and the labor market. So I said the triangle of knowledge that I described before. It's a difficult problem. It is not a first order problem. It is not leading the country to a disaster like the debt problem that we had before or the financial problems, but it is one of the second order problems that are very important. It might turn to be serious, for instance, if we need people for the tourist activities, for construction, for the agricultural sector. That's, I mean, otherwise, if we don't solve this problem, this will be reflected in a higher current account deficit and higher inflation.
Okay.
And lower growth.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, so we could have a very, very long conversation for much longer. May I close with this comment that it used to be that there was a time where the only thing you could talk about with the central banker was monetary money supply and maybe possibly interest rates. And I think one good thing that came out from the Eurozone crisis and the whole global financial crisis is that now the central banking system, I would say also the commercial banking system, takes much more pays more attention to the real economy, and we could talk about the triple helix with the knowledge creation, but also the skills. The labor market, where investment, foreign investment should be placed, how do you increase productivity? We mentioned the agricultural sector and so forth. We will have the opportunity to continue this conversation with the governor and with other speakers in the events to come at the Hellenic Observatory. If you happen not to be in our mailing list, please try to find a way to join our mailing list and to follow our events in the future. But for tonight, before I say that, we have a little present, as we usually do. You've been with us before, Governor, so we almost ran out of presents with an LSC logo, but...
Thank you very much.
I think I will present you with our latest of presents.
Is this LSC jewelry?
Almost.
Okay, thank you very much.
It's a
humble pen.
A pen. Yes,
okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
And it goes together with the LSE.
LSE, okay.
But on this note, please join me in thanking us.
Thank you very much.